Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of What the Health Just Happened. We talk about all things healthcare, community, business, and life. The goods, the bads, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the rights, and everything in between. We're also fortunate to have on a variety of guests way smarter than we are to share their expertise and a few laughs along the way. I would be lying if I didn't say today's guest is probably the most excited I've been. If you're not familiar with this man, you should be. Add it to your list. Joining us today is best-selling author, including one of my favorite books of all time, The Energy Bus, keynote speaker, proud husband and father. Welcome, Mr. John Gordon.
Woo! Let's go. Eric, great to be with you.
Man, the intro is the hardest man. The intro is the hardest part. I have 900 things I want to ask you, talk about. Where do you want to start?
Man, very kind of you, though, by the way, for that introduction. But where should we start? I mean, Energy Bus?
Energy Bus is good. Coffee Bean, second half. Can I ask? I have one right off the bat.
Sure.
The mindset of get to versus have to. Yeah. Where did that come from? How important is it? I mean,
so everyone is talking about that now. I wrote that in 2008 in the no complaining rule. And the idea was you get to do this. You don't have to do this. And when you change your have to's to get to's, you change a complaining voice to an appreciative heart. And I really believe that abundance flows into your life when gratitude flows out of your heart. So the more you focus on, I get to do this. I get to make a difference. I get to drive in traffic while so many can't drive a car. I get to go to a work. To a job and do work where many are unemployed. I get to live this life where my mom passed away at 59 and she doesn't get to live this life anymore, but I do. So everyday life is a gift, not an obligation.
I get to, my AC's broken. I get to live under a shelter.
Exactly.
Right? I only have peanut butter versus turkey. I get to eat this sandwich. It's my son's at the corner. That's why it just jumped out to me. Did you want to write books growing up? Like, how did this happen?
I would write books. I did not know I was a writer. But what happened was my wife threatened to leave me because I was so negative and miserable. 31 years old. We had just moved to Jacksonville.
From what area?
From Atlanta.
That's right.
And I was struggling. I lost my job during the dot-com crash. Didn't know how I was going to pay the bills. And I was crumbling from the inside out. And I'm blaming my wife for why my life didn't turn out the way I wanted to. And so I became really negative and accusatory, like, oh, it's because of you that I haven't lived my dreams. It's because of you that I haven't been able to go for it. Meanwhile, it was me. I was just blaming her. And she said, look, I love you, but I'm not going to spend my life with someone who makes me so miserable. If you don't change, we're over. And it was a huge wake-up call. I didn't want to get divorced. I wanted to stay married.
Your wife?
Yeah.
Pre or post-kids?
We had two little kids.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
And so these kids are really young. And again, everything's falling apart. How am I going to provide for my family? I feel like a failure. And so my identity was really being crushed and crumbled at the same time. And I'm like, okay, I've got to figure this out. I want to be more positive. And I began researching ways I could be more positive. And this was during the emerging field of positive psychology. So I'm researching these ideas. I began practicing these ideas. And as I practiced them, I saw a benefit. I began a weekly positive tip back in 2002, where I was emailing this out. No one was doing email newsletters back
then. No chance.
And I started to share those out. I had 5 subscribers initially, my mother, my brother.
Hi, Mom. Shout out, Mom. That's what I say. We always say hi,
best friend from college. You know, they were getting that newsletter whether they liked it or not. And gradually, people began sharing that, and more people began signing up for my newsletter. And after that, I began writing and speaking. Now, I should say there was a time in between there when I said, you know, what am I born to do? Why am I here? Why am I so miserable? And how can I become happier? And I realized I was so focused on myself and not others. So that was causing me to be miserable. And I wasn't living my purpose. And I said, why am I here? Writing and speaking did come to me during that time. Okay. I'm miserable, I'm negative, my wife's about to leave me, like, why am I here? And writing and speaking came to me, and I knew right then and there I was going to write and speak, but about what? And that's where the positivity came in. And so ironically, I've become known for this positivity, positive leadership. It's my life's work.
Is it exhausting sometimes?
Well, I'm not naturally positive. I'm from
which I love. That's honest.
Yeah. I'm from New York, Long Island, right? Jewish Italian family. A lot of food. A lot of guilt. A lot of wine. A lot of wine. My dad was a New York City police officer. You know, undercover narcotics. So he was battling the drug cartels.
Yeah.
The streets of New York every day.
In that time.
Yeah. I would get up in the morning. Hey, good morning, Dad. He'd say, "What's so good about it?" So. My dad was not very positive. When I began speaking, he said, "I can't believe people actually pay you to speak."
Who is this guy?
Yeah. He goes, "I can't believe people pay you to speak. When you were a kid, we paid you to shut up." And so that was my mindset growing up. So I honestly have struggled with it in a lot of ways, but I think that's what makes me a good teacher.
Yes.
I know what it's like to be negative. I know how to overcome it. I have overcome it. I've become so much more of a positive person. Like, my natural state now, I would say, is to wake up and be more positive, where I used to wake up depressed, anxious, negative all the time. Now I really look for the positive. I find the positive. I am proof that you can rewire your brain from negative to positive. I am proof that you can actually bring more faith into your life, which will lead to greater health, bring more positivity into your life, perspective, mindset. So I think I've become an expert on mindset because, one, I had to work on myself. Then I had kids that were not always so positive. My son was a competitive tennis player and quite negative. So now I had to literally help my son. And I watch him even now. I'm like, what's wrong with that kid? Why is he being that way? I go, oh. No, he's like, I used to be.
Because he's my son.
Yeah, he's my son. Yeah. Wait, I used to be like that.
I love so much of this. I have 900 questions. Before the journey of research, did you start Mohs yet, or was this during the process?
So the question was, what am I born to do? Why am I here?
Yep.
Writing and speaking came, but I can't just go be a writer and speaker.
You got to make
how will
pay
I
the bills.
Provide for my family?
Pay the bills.
Yeah, how am I going to pay the bills? How will I make money? I used to be in the restaurant business in Atlanta.
Buckhead, right?
Buckhead.
Yes.
Owned a bar at 24. So I said, let me see if I can get back into the restaurant business. I wanted something simple. I can make a burrito. I can make tacos.
I can put cheese on it.
I can make a quesadilla, right? Okay, great concept from Atlanta. So I brought Mohs to Jacksonville knowing that, okay, it did well there. I think it could do well here. And I talked to the Mohs guys. I knew them. I thought, okay, let me try to see if I can actually make a Mohs successful here. Second mortgage of my home, $20,000 in credit cards.
In the funk, depressed, all the things,
everything, moved here. Everything we had, we put into that Mohs in Tinseltown. Like everything.
Oh, wow. I ate there 1,000 times.
Thank you for supporting us early on. We literally were hanging by a thread so many times. Like if we did not make it, we're done. Like we had everything we owned, every dollar in that restaurant. And it broke even the first week, broke even the second, but it didn't make money. Broke even the third. So now money is running out, but we're not making money. It was a really very scary time.
That was the Tinseltown location.
Yep.
Did you have Jack's Beach also?
Yes, I opened up Jack's Beach and San Marco, Atlantic Beach, and then other guys came into town. They opened up Regency. They opened up the Avenues.
Yep.
They opened up others. And eventually, it was a blessing, they bought my stores.
They bought you out.
At first, when they came in, they actually took half of my business.
You also say you were probably like, screw these guys.
How dare you steal my turf? They were friends, and I let them do it. I could have owned the territory, but I said, yeah, come on in. Not knowing that when they opened at the Avenues and Regency.
It cuts into those spots.
Yeah, so we went from doing about $32,000 a week, a record for Mohs, a record in the entire country. That one Mohs in Tinseltown, we went down to about $16,000 a week. Yeah, cut in half. So our profits were cut in half and the other locations were doing decent, but it worked out great because we stayed friends. Yep. I didn't get mad. And then they actually offered to buy my stores. And when they did, I knew I was ready to just write and speak 100%. That was in 2005 that I sold my Mohs.
You understand these timings, right?
Oh, yeah.
Our entire fraternity basically lived at Mohs, one of those locations.
Yeah, during that era.
So the same time when you're researching,
That's how old I am. He's like, when I was in my fraternity, I'm like an adult with kids.
Hey, we're the old guys now.
Looking at us,
we're old. When you're researching the psychology of positivity, like who are you researching? Because now people look at you, people read your stuff, people research what you're talking about. Who did you look?
You know, it's funny. People give me a hard time. To this day, some people will say, you're not a psychologist. Who are you to write these books? And I go, well, Millions of psychologists actually read my books and use my books with their patients. So I may not have a degree in psychology, but I think in that terms. And it's interesting. My biological father, who didn't raise me.
Not the cop. Okay.
But he's a psychologist. He's a social worker.
Oh, jeez.
So I naturally have.
It's built in.
Yeah. Have the genes for it in somehow, some way, because I can diagnose someone literally in one conversation. I can help them through their challenge, their issue, and help them figure out what the problem is and literally provide the solution in one conversation. It's what I do with star athletes, with coaches, with high performers, with CEOs. In one conversation, they're like, you got me. How'd you get me? You ask questions, you look for patterns, and you quickly can figure it out. And we complicate psychology in many ways, but I was researching early on the positive psychology people, and we're talking about
John Maxwell?
No, he wasn't really positive psychology, but Robert Emmons at UC Davis, I believe he was out of, and all the emerging research that was coming out. Barbara Fredrickson's research was coming out, and I was just researching some of these ideas, and again, it was so new. It was in its infancy, but I'm able to take things and then apply it. So I would see the research and go, oh, how do we apply this as a coach to help someone? So I came up with, for instance, the thank you walk. Mm. The research shows you can't be stressed and thankful at the same time. Mm. So I'm thinking, okay, if you walk and you get a boost of energy from walking, you practice gratitude while you're walking, doing those two together,
how are you
exponential benefit.
Whoever, I don't care. I love you, Mom. I always say hi to Mom. Whoever hears this, one person, 1,000 people, walk and be grateful at the same time. Good luck being in a bad mood.
It is my number one tip. And it changed my life because I began walking every day, practicing gratitude. Remember, I wanted to be more positive. I was on a quest to be more positive. And as I began walking every single day, I became more positive. My wife noticed a difference. I started sharing this with others. People started walking, feeling the same benefits. Now I've had probably millions of people take walks of gratitude. What are you doing when you're doing that, though? You're also rewiring your brain, because your brain is actually an antenna. I wrote about this in The One Truth, one of my recent books.
That's over here somewhere.
And The One Truth, it's an epic revolutionary book, because it literally is a new paradigm shifting understanding of psychology, science, and spirituality, and how they all come together. And when you understand the one truth, you can truly understand the psychology of what drives someone. And it's either connection or disconnection. The brain is an antenna. So you're either tuning into a negative frequency or a positive frequency. Ooh. And you tune into the negative frequency, that's a lower frequency.
That's what you're going to hear too.
Fear, worry, anxiety, and doubt. And the root for the Greek word of anxious means to separate and divide. So when you're anxious, you actually feel separate and divided. Okay, gratitude unites and connects. So you're practicing gratitude. It's the opposite of disconnection. It creates connection. So now you're walking, practicing gratitude, thinking positive thoughts. You're now connecting to that higher frequency. You're nourishing your brain. You're nourishing your body, your mind, and your soul, and you're uniting and connecting. So now as I'm walking, every day I'm doing that, I'm tuning into the positive frequency, not the negative frequency, and I'm literally changing how my brain is working, and my mind and soul began healing in that process.
Are you researching this and learning it, or you're practicing it and figuring it out?
I'm practicing figuring it out. But now again, in The One Truth, I've been challenging neuroscientists and people who are doing research to, hey, can we actually start to measure this understanding? Because I'm convinced the brain literally is an antenna, and no one has been saying that. But if you look at 86 billion neurons in your brain, every neuron literally has a transmitter and receiver.
The best computer in the world.
Right. It's really a transducer. Someone recently on Joe Rogan said he actually thinks it's a transducer, which is even different than an antenna.
Who's Joe Rogan?
So from a health standpoint, the best thing you do is practice gratitude and walk and pray. And as you're doing that, you're literally tuning into that higher level of frequency that nourishes you rather than the lower level of frequency that drains you.
Man, that's
so heavy. Quick question for you. When you were in your negative state, one, how long was it? And can you give us some examples that were like maybe trigger things that would trigger you to get negative? And we'll just start there.
Yeah. How long was I negative? 24 years?
But, you know, when, 0 to 24?
No, 27, like, 28, 29, 30. Actually, 31 years, yeah. I should
say. I'm 42. I'm like 41 and a half years.
Yeah. Were there more extreme periods? I know probably at the end where you hit your peak, but yeah. Like, were there, like, when you were younger, when you got married?
When I look back, younger, even in middle school, I've had some suicidal thoughts. Told my mom that. She freaked out. When I was older, a lot of anxiety and fear. And also, never feel like you're measuring up. I was a Division I athlete, but...
What sport?
Lacrosse.
Okay.
Which I played at Cornell University. And I was trying to always be perfect, right? Mm-hmm. So my identity was tied to my performance.
Okay.
So everything in my life was about trying to feel successful, trying to be enough to validate myself through performance and success. So if you didn't perform well, you were nothing. If you perform well, okay, you were great. But you're only great for that moment until the next game, the next opportunity, the next practice.
The next goal, the next rep.
And you
rep.
Messed up on that, so now you're a failure again. Oh, so man. That was a big part of my psyche and makeup. And then in my 20s, that's where I'm moving and shaking. So I'm making things happen. But when things would go wrong or not measure up, I would get down. But I wouldn't say I was depressed. But what I would say is once we had kids... And I had the responsibility. Being a young father at 28 years old.
That's pretty young. Yeah.
Yeah, 28. And not being mature enough in terms of how to deal with it. And not being a great husband. I did not take on that responsibility well. And I took on the pressure and the stress and the fear of not being able to provide for my family. And then when I lose the job, all the fears came true.
Gotcha.
When I couldn't provide for my family... All the fears came flooding in, and now I was confronted with the reality of who am I because I'm no longer successful. Because in my 20s, I was making things happen. Had the bar, 24 years old, started a nonprofit, raising money for youth-focused charities, ran for city council. Again, making that happen. Again, I lost the election, had to deal with that. But right away, go to law school. So then go work for .com. Had 100,000 shares.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I'm like making it happen. Yeah, I'm gonna be a billionaire. I'm gonna be a billionaire with this company because we are at the cutting edge of wireless technology and what we're gonna do. And I was so excited, again, moving and shaking, and then everything came crumbling down. And then that's when I lose the job, lose my identity. But that had to happen to prepare me to do this work.
I love, like, again, this is John Gordon. This is kind of train Eric or any other man and husband and father out there.
Oh, yeah.
I would be shocked if anyone has not heard your name, read some of your books. They haven't. They should. But like John Gordon is sharing, we're all living the same life, just a different episode.
Yep.
You went through stuff that some of us are going through now.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Maybe on the backside of starting that stage. I just appreciate you sharing this.
You know how many people reach out to me that I do talk to who are going through what I went through? How many star athletes are going through what they're going through? How many people who have kids who are struggling with anxiety and stress? We have more kids dealing with mental health than ever. And that's why I did write The One Truth, because The One Truth literally is the answer to the epidemic we're facing in terms of mental health. It explains all that. You're pointing to your phone.
We'll talk about that. I'm saying, like, I think eventually
it's part of
with kids
the phone
or
is
worse.
Part of the problem. The phone is just reinforcing that you're always looking outside instead of inside.
Ooh.
The phone is reinforcing separation and disconnection. Because if I'm on the phone and I'm having a great connection with someone and a great conversation, I'm uplifted.
Yep.
So it's really never the phone. It's really not the TV. It's always how it is affecting us and our state of mind. When you're in a low state of mind and I look at the phone and I see someone's life that I'm jealous of, low state, it really bothers me. And I'm questioning my existence. High state of mind, you look at that and you're like, my life is great.
Like, that's okay.
Awesome.
That's okay.
Big deal.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
cares?
Yeah.
Who cares they just won the lottery? Man, I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
Yes.
It's when you're not feeling like you're measuring up or you're not happy with your life. Low state, high state. It's never the circumstance. It's always our state of mind.
Do you know something I say? You got something to ask?
Just random quick question. Oh, yeah. Was there somebody through all of this that you were comparing yourself to?
Oh, was yeah. I mean,
but someone maybe particular.
Yeah, I used to compare myself to a lot of people. And as we've heard, comparison is the thief of joy.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my quote, but it's a popular quote out there. And it really is. The more you compare yourself, the more you compare, you despair.
Ooh.
And if I compare, I will definitely find myself in despair because you're meant to run your own race. You're meant to live your purpose, to do what you're called to do. But in the past, for instance, when I started writing and speaking, And I wrote The Energy Bus. Patrick Lencioni, you know, wrote The Advantage and The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And he was about 6-7 years ahead of me. And he was really popular, crushing it. And I was jealous. I would watch
comparing.
Totally.
And I'd be like, I want to be like that. I want to be doing that. And I definitely compared. And I made a decision one day. I remember finding myself in that mode of comparing and being jealous. And I made a decision. John, stop that. Celebrate him. Celebrate him. Honor him and admire what he's doing and just focus on that. And I did. I celebrated him. I admired him. Well, there was a day when The Energy Bus was number one in the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. Hit number one. His books were usually there, but I hit number one. And I got a note from him. Hey, did you know your book is the biggest best-selling book in the business world right now? What an honor. What a congratulations. You should be so proud, Pat. So here I was celebrating him from afar, and he said that. And now we're actually really great friends. We did an event That's together cool. 2 years ago called A Day with John and Pat, and we've become great friends. So it's a really great example of don't compare, celebrate. If there's someone that is doing great work that you're jealous of, okay, don't allow their jealousy to make you bitter. Use their talent and their success to drive you to get better and say, okay, what are they doing? How can I do what they're doing? Or how can I learn from what they're doing to do what I'm really meant to do to go to a higher level? So I'm learning from people all the time. I was just with John Maxwell recently. You mentioned John Maxwell. John's 77 years old.
Yeah,
I'm 54.
He's
been doing this a lot longer than me. He's been doing it for years. He's a legend, as you said. So
you're a legend too.
Well, I appreciate that.
You're a legend too.
I'm on the rise, but I got a lot to go. I got a lot to go. And I see John and I go, you know, I go, last time I was with him, I said, learn from him. Learn from him. What can I learn from him? What can I take away from him? And not on the writing side, not really even on the speaking side, although, you know, he's gifted at that. What I realized was I love the way he engages people who are in the faith world and the secular world and the way he's able to bring it all together. And I said, I want to learn more of how to do that the way he does.
Are you second half? Can we talk about overlapping the two?
Sure.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, the integration of it is key. You're not meant to live a separate life. You're meant to live an integrated life. The word integration, integrity, comes from the word integer, which means whole and complete, going back to the one truth. The more you're whole and complete, there's a connection, there's a oneness there, and then there's power there. The more you lack integrity, the more you have a gap in your character. There's a gap, which means there's a whole separation, a disconnection in what you say and what you do and who you want to be and who you are. When you have that disconnection, then that leads to more despair. It leads to narcissism. And actually, you'll find that narcissists actually have a lot of mental health disorders that are typical of people with mental health challenges. So if you're a narcissist, you actually likely suffer from depression and bipolar and other issues, which shows a disconnection, because all mental health disorders report feelings of isolation, disconnection, being alone, and feeling separate. Going back to the anxiety term, anxious means divided, separate. Again, everything is so simple. We make it complicated.
Hey, it's simple, but it's not easy.
It's not easy, but you go to connection or you go to separateness. And so as we start talking, I would literally be able to diagnose someone to know they're separate. They're disconnected. What's causing the separation? What's causing the disconnection? And how can we move that person towards wholeness and healing?
I got to tell a brief story, right? When you're gifted something or a moment in your life, someone gifted me The Energy Bus, because like that book, it's almost commercial break. There was a moment in my life that was like good, but also not great. And someone gifted me that book and said, you need to read this. And I'm telling you, like, I base a lot of my life principles off that book.
That means a lot.
The motto with the kids. I gift that to everyone. Like, that book. We're talking about a ton of great books. I'm telling you, we're going to run out of so much time. There's so many good books. But that The Energy Bus has changed so many lives. And the concept behind it is just, it's top notch. So,
I sold Moe's. After I sold Moe's, we got a little money from selling Moe's. I wanted to write and speak. And it wasn't going well. And I'm walking, praying, thinking maybe I should give it all up. And as I'm walking in my neighborhood and praying, the idea for The Energy Bus came to me.
Really?
Boom. On a walk. And I wrote that book in 3.5 weeks of true divine inspiration, The Energy Bus. True inspiration. Oh, And it was rejected by 30 publishers. So it's been a journey with that book. And I've learned I had to learn to live the principles of that book for it to become more powerful. And as I learned to live those principles, that's when the book became successful. It took 5 years for it to be a bestseller. So the fact that it resonated with you, it's wild that book has taken off the way it has.
That's my story. There's hundreds of thousands of other me's, right? Oh my gosh, I love that story. Almost commercial break. We love shout outs. Any shout outs?
Shout outs to who?
Whoever you want. I always say hi, mom.
My wife.
Hey, I say his wife.
My wife, big time.
Can you say your wife's name?
Catherine.
Hello, Catherine.
Yeah, shout out, Catherine.
Without Catherine, man, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. She was strong. She was tough. And she wouldn't take my stuff. You know?
Catherine's the one.
Yeah, she's like.
She's the one.
Yeah, yeah. If it wasn't for Catherine, there's no way I'd be doing this.
That's my Stephanie. That's my wife. Yeah. Anyone else? We love shout outs, by the way. It'll happen more through the show. But
all right.
Oh, Mac, we see you, Mac, buddy. Oh, my gosh. John Gordon, that's what the hell just happened.
Come on, Mac.
Welcome back to the second half of What the Hell Just Happened. If you missed the first half, I stuttered there. I love when I stutter. You can catch it on your favorite podcast, YouTube, all those things if you're catching on the radio. It doesn't matter. Man, John Gordon. We got John Gordon hanging out in the studio with us. Yeah. That's pretty epic, man. We talked about all types of stuff. You were very candid, shared some really cool stories. You're way smarter than we are. That's why we like guests like you coming on the show. I love healthy or not healthy. You get the concept. Should we do positive or not positive?
Healthy, not healthy.
Healthy or not healthy. Okay, healthy or not healthy, owning a bar and restaurant at 24 in Buckhead.
Healthy until you're married.
Okay. Healthy or not healthy, working with your kids.
Healthy. Both my kids work with me.
I know that. I think it's epic. We might talk about that. Healthy or not healthy, owning Moe's franchises.
Not healthy when people are getting free burritos.
Hey, that's a side story, man. I can't believe I told you that. Healthy or not healthy, salmon sandwiches from Beachside Seafood.
Well, salmon plain, healthy.
Salmon plain.
Yeah,
that's at LifeWork Leadership, you'd mentioned, I said, what'd you order from Beachside Seafood?
Yes, salmon.
Okay. Healthy or not healthy, energy vampires.
Not healthy.
If you don't know what that is, we'll probably talk about it. Healthy or not healthy, being a coffee bean.
Very healthy.
Very healthy. Can we talk about the coffee bean concept?
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I got some ridiculous stuff here. It's Easter, so there's a lot of easy carrots and eggs.
It's a book I wrote with a guy named Damon West, and it's about the carrot, the egg, and the coffee bean. Life is like a big pot of boiling hot water, and if you put a carrot in the boiling hot water, what happens? It gets softened. It gets weakened by the environment. You put an egg in the boiling hot water, what happens?
It gets hard.
Hard. Right.
Hard-boiled eggs. So we can become like the egg, hardened heart, bitter, angry, frustrated. We could be like the carrot, weakened, fearful, anxious, and stressed. We don't want to be either. You want to be the coffee bean. You take that coffee bean, you put that into boiling hot water. It actually makes coffee. It transforms the water. It's not defined by its circumstance. It's not defined by its environment. It transforms its environment. And that's our power. We have the power within us to transform the environments that we're in. And leaders need to know that. Kids need to know that. Wherever you go, you can impact your environment. You're not a victim of your environment or your circumstance. You have the power to transform it.
So the show's called What the Health Just Happened, right? We talk about healthcare, business, community life. Our company who pays for all of this stuff.
Shout out to 12.
It's called 212 Benefits.
Yep.
What is water at 211 degrees? Really hot water.
Yep.
What is water at 212 degrees?
Vapor.
Boiling, which creates steam and powers a locomotive. So it's like 1 degree of change. I love. Now we got to add coffee beans to it, man.
Bean benefits.
Bean benefits. We might change our name to Coffee Bean Benefits. So you like mentioned, you talk about leadership development. I'm all this, your videos, your speaking, the books, all the things. You got some big stuff coming up always, right? So there's an event in Orlando, some leadership development. What's coming up? And then definitely the training camp thing, which is epic.
Yep. We do these day of development events where they're in person or online. And it's where we teach mindset, leadership, and teamwork. So leaders come. They also sometimes will bring their teams with them if they really want to grow their teams. But you're going to learn how to have a more positive mindset, how to be a better leader, how to build a stronger team. That's what we're the best in the world at. We are the best at helping leaders build stronger teams. And we know that. So day development, is doing that. And we're actually going to be launching Certified Positive Leader, where people will come to these events and get certified to be a positive leader, which is going to be really cool.
To then speak and talk and be a
representative? To become a trainer. So okay. A certified positive leader is you lead it, so you'll have the skills and the resources and the knowledge to be able to lead your team with it. But then there's the trainer, positive leadership trainer, where you'll actually be able to train others, where you're now developing leaders to be better leaders so they can impact their teams. Yep. The trainers are the exponential factor, right? You train someone to be a leader and you're training multiple leaders, now you're having a multiplication impact. So not everyone's called to be a trainer, but everyone is supposed to be a positive leader. We know that. Like, you're meant to be a positive leader. I am. Why?
Not if you ask my wife, man. I'm kidding.
We may not be, but we're meant to be. Positive leaders elevate people, places, and performance. Mm. So it's all about that. I'll elevate your performance as a positive leader. I'm going to elevate the place. You put a positive leader at a school, they're going to transform the school. You bring a positive leader into a program as a coach, he's going to transform that team.
I love that. So you spoke at Providence. All our kids go to Providence. Not all of ours. Me and Joey's. Love that. So this is for everyone. This is not just CEOs, CFOs, sales developers. This is for everybody.
When we launch Certified Positive Leader, we're going to actually have a college track. So college kids going to be able to take part in this. But going to the event in Jacksonville.
Training camp.
I'm fired up for this. Training camp event in Ponte Vedra. I mean, TPC nothing like it. Clubhouse, May 15th, TPC Clubhouse. We got Eddie George coming in, Dabo Sweeney, Sean McVay, Kevin O'Connell, Mac Brown, Clint Hurdle, Trent Dilfer, Jim Rome, the famous broadcaster.
I know all these names.
Jay Glazer, Fox. Yeah. I mean, Corey Epic. Close, who right now is in the Final Four at UCLA Women's Basketball, and just named Coach of the Year. We already had her coming, and now she's in the Final Four.
Is she still going to come?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she's coming.
Oh, I love
it. Because they'll be over by then. And so I brought together literally the most elite coaches in sports right now, all coming into one. Just Dabo alone would be a great day. But we have all these other coaches going to be there. I literally came up with the agenda the other day on how it's going to flow. It's going to be an epic, epic event. And it's only 150 people in the room.
That's a zest. So May 15th, right?
May 15th.
At TPC here in Jacksonville or Ponte Vedra.
Right.
All day event.
All day, 9 to 5.
9 to 5.
There's a VIP dinner the night before with all of the coaches. So there'll be an intimate dinner.
This is not like Coach Eric Ross for I-9 Flag Football or Jacks Beach Baseball.
Maybe one day.
Do you want to hang out with Sean McVay? Yeah, you want to hang out with Sean and talk to him. You want to hang out with Dabo and talk to him.
Go online and look at
this. It's an exclusive event. People have given us a hard time about the price. It's not meant to be a conference tickets are $200.
Correct.
It's a $5,000 event.
What's the max capacity?
Like 150, that's it.
Yeah, this is an exclusive.
We had about 20 seats left because, again, a lot of top leaders wanted to be in this room. But here's the great thing. Like, if you're leading a company, you're leading a business, this is for you. Come there because you're going to learn from the best in the industry and the best in the world. Like, they could be CEOs of companies. So even though they're talking about sports, they're going to be talking about how this applies to your business, how this applies to your people. Like, Buzz Williams is going to be there, and I'm going to talk to Buzz and Corey about how they invest in their people to develop them outside of their jobs, outside of playing basketball, because they're the best in the world at actually developing their players into people, into leaders. So if you have a leadership development program, you want to learn from them on what they do and how they do it.
A part of me wants to not talk about this because it takes away from the time we can record, but another part, because in a couple months, this won't be relevant. Leaders should go to this. It's applicable to anyone.
Oh, yeah.
150 max. Are you going to talk? Are you facilitating? Like, what's your role on this? Because there's the list of names on this is ridiculous.
Well, I'm only going to talk for about 15 minutes. Tim Timberlake, the pastor at Celebration Church, he's going to open us up. Matthew West, the musician, is actually going to play music and sing and do the Star Spangled Banner. So that's going to be awesome. He's going to start with the national anthem. Then we got Tim Timberlake. Welcome everyone. He's going to say a prayer, set the intention for the day. I'm now going to talk about training camp and how that came about. 15 minutes. It's a really cool story in a lot of ways. We don't have a lot of time, but
it's a cool story
because, like, how did I start speaking to sports teams in the first place?
Which we're going to talk about. It's a great pivot.
It's wild because when I look back how it happened, I didn't make it happen. It just happened. Mike Smith was the defensive coordinator of the Jaguars. Jack Del Rio, head coach.
Hey, I'm a Jags fan.
Okay, the energy bus just comes out. Okay, it had just come out. And I went on a 28-city book tour. I get back and I speak to a local real estate office. one of the realtors was Mike Smith's real estate agent.
Was it Quentin?
I don't even know. It was a female. And she said to Mike, Mike, you need to have John Gordon speak to the team. He'll help you win. And he goes, who's John Gordon? She goes, oh, he's a speaker. He's like, is he a real estate speaker? How is a real estate speaker going to help me with our team? And she says, no. Like, he's an inspirational speaker. Like, he will get you guys ready. I'm telling you, he's going to help. He goes, okay, well, I'll bring it to Jack. We'll see, because, you know, I don't make those decisions, but Jack does. He's around the facility. He talks to Mike Ryan. Mike Ryan was the trainer for the Jaguars at the time.
I remember all these names.
And Mike had a copy of the Energy Bus. I gave Mike a copy. Just here, Mike. Here's a copy of my new book. So Mike goes to talk to Mike about me and says, hey, you know this John Gordon guy? And Mike says, yeah, he's actually a friend of mine. I have his book. Hands him the book. He reads it, gives it to Jack.
Dang.
Jack reads it and loves the part about energy vampires. Mm. We can't allow energy vampires to sabotage your team. Yep. This is great advice for anyone running a business. You've got to get rid of the negativity that sabotages your team. Too often, we allow it to persist, exist, and eventually it will destroy your team if you let it. So you have to let the energy vampires off the bus, or you have to transform them. I had one leader say, energy vampires welcome. Expect to be transformed. I've had other leaders say, no energy vampires allowed. Like, you're not allowed to bring your negativity. We're going to focus on our mission and our passion and our purpose.
I'm in this bus, by the way.
I love it.
No energy vampires.
Yeah, no energy vampires allowed. And, and you make sure you tell everyone on your team that, right?
Or you better be, you're going to be transformed.
So Jack loved that part of it. And he said, hey, I want you to speak to my team. First time ever speaking to any team.
This is first time.
This is 2007.
Oh, geez.
Never spoke to a team before. Never spoke to a college team, a high school team. And he goes, will you speak to my team? And I'm like, yeah, I'll speak to your team. I don't know what made me say this. I said, if you get a copy of the book for everyone on the team, I'll speak for nothing. And he goes, done. He goes, I'll do better than that. I'll get a copy for everyone in the entire organization. Because I want everyone who interacts with my players to bring positive energy, not negative energy. And he did. He bought a copy for everyone. That was the year they beat the Steelers in the first round of the playoffs. Magical season. Hey. And there was a
David G at quarterback.
Yeah, David Garrard. Yes. They got rid of Byron Leftwich at the time. There was a headline in the paper that said, Energy Bus fuels Jaguars win streak.
I wish that's cool.
I have it. I'm gonna post it soon, actually. I'm posting it soon.
Oh, this is epic.
And I'm posting because I found it the other day as we're cleaning out our house, because we're knocking our house down, and I found this article. And I was like, oh, man.
The actual newspaper article?
Yeah,
or
found
clip?
It. Oh, I took a picture
Send
of it.
Send me that picture for sure.
2007. And then next thing you know, Mike Smith becomes the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons.
Yep.
Calls me up. Matt Ryan was a rookie quarterback at the time. Hey, John, got this rookie quarterback. I want to do the energy bus. Will you come here and speak and we'll do the same thing as you did with the Jaguars?
Started everything, guys.
And after that,
after that,
boom, 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 just started speaking to all these teams. But it started because a real estate agent that I spoke to. A small little room. Okay, small beginnings lead to big things. Hey. A small little room here in Jacksonville, right, with just a few real estate agents, and I'm talking to them, and she says, you got to bring John Gordon in. He'll help you win. You can't make that up. And that leads to now all these coaches coming into training camp in Ponte Vedra. It's like full circle, because Sean McVay read my book that Mike Smith and I wrote together. It's called You Win in the Locker Room First. The seven C's.
I don't think I have that one.
Yeah, it is. The seven C's to build a winning team. You win in the locker room first. So Sean read that, reached out to me. Worked with
him. Sean McVay, what team does he play for, Danny? He's a diehard Rams fan. I love it.
He is the coach of the Rams. And
yeah, play for it. Sean, he could play still, by the way.
Oh, he could still, probably. Sean reads that, says, hey, can I meet with you? I want to talk about building my culture. And we met. And now most coaches will reach out when they get a job or something, and they'll reach out and want to talk about that, all because of that one experience.
So again, I'm a proud Jags fan.
Me too.
Exhausting, right?
I root for the Jags.
This is one of the questions I want to ask. So you've met and spoke with so many people, right? Yep. Incredible teams. One, like, who's your team when you're not speaking, like, these are my guys, college and pro?
I would say Clemson, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
I've worked with them the last 12 years. 12 years every training camp. And my son went to Clemson. My daughter went to Clemson. My daughter went first. So they're my team. Dabo and I are really just close. Yep. I mean, you spend every single training camp every year.
You get to know someone.
And we're talking
well.
About leadership. We're talking about culture. They've ingrained a lot of my principles into their stuff. You'll see some of my things on the walls at the facility there. So like that's my team. And I just love Clemson. I just love everything about them. And Dabo is the best leader I've ever been around. He is unbelievable, off the charts.
Second best.
No, I think, I think you know what's funny? I always tell people, I'm not the best leader. I'm the best at helping leaders build their teams, but I'm not the best leader. Like, I know I'm not the best leader. I'm working on my leadership because my team's growing right now.
Yep.
And I actually look at what I wrote and what sometimes the way I, how I lead, I go, man, I got to get better here.
I got to read that book.
I got to follow page 47 here. Yeah. I'm getting discouraged right now, man. I got to stay positive. And it was actually during COVID when I, I literally lost 100% of my business in 3 days.
Whoa. You said this at LifeWork Leadership.
Yeah, 100% in 3 days. I tell the story. Man. And I was like getting all those texts. I was like, darn it. Next day, damn. Next day, shit.
Energy day, vampire.
We won't say the other word. And my wife's like, aren't you the guy that writes those positive books? Like, we'll find a way through this. I go, no, we're done. Like, it's over. And she's like, John, we got to stay positive. I made a decision right then and there to stay positive. And that moment, we were able to turn things around. So in terms of leadership, like, again, I really am great at helping leaders. And it's funny, I'm now working on being the best leader I can be, because as my team's growing, you have to rise higher as your team grows. As the challenges grow, as the issues become bigger, as the stakes become greater, you actually have to rise higher in your leadership. So now that I'm doing this a lot in my own way of leading, I've actually become a better teacher because I have more empathy and sympathy and understanding of what every leader is dealing with. So it actually makes me a better teacher to help them now that I'm leading a bigger team.
Quick, you got a question?
No, go ahead.
Quick story. We'll save that. Never mind. You dodged the question. Favorite college team right now? This is your, you're
pro
a fan.
Pro team. Yeah,
any sport.
I said college. Pro team. You know what's cool? I Zoomed with the New York Yankees coaching staff the other day. So I grew up a Yankees fan.
Oh, wow. Yeah, New York guy.
My dad was a New York City police officer, worked the Yankees games. He's no longer alive. So I even said that to those guys. I said, hey, guys, I said, grew up a New York Yankees fan. My dad was NYPD. I said, this is an honor. I go, okay, let's get to it right now. And then I started challenging them on becoming a stronger, more united, connected leadership team as a coaching staff. So it was really cool to actually work with the Yankees. But so I'd say Yankees from that love standpoint. But Rams, you know, and Sean, love the Rams, love the Jags, love those two teams in a lot of ways. But whoever I go speak to,
I root for them.
I mean, I start to root for, because you speak to them, you connect with them, you root for them. I spoke to the Seahawks last year, rooted for them. Spoke to the Bears. Not every team I
but you got to say
with
the
wins.
Bears. The Bears.
They didn't have they had a great start to the season, and it's funny, they played the Commanders. And that was a turning point in both of their seasons. Mm. The Bears went downhill after that.
Oh, yeah.
Commanders skyrocketed. I spoke to the Commanders before the playoffs, before they were going to play Tampa Bay. I got a call out of the blue. Hey, you want to speak to us before we head up to Tampa? I'm like, at first I was like, man, I'm tired. I've been speaking on all these engagements. Like, you know, I didn't feel great. I'm like, nah, I don't know if I want to. The next day I'm like, no, I have to. Like, I'm always going to think about what if. I got to make a difference. So I literally flew up there the day they were leaving. 10 a.m. Saturday morning, spoke to the Commanders. One of the best times I ever had speaking to a team. Brotherhood, belief, right? And just talking about being you and authentically you. Don't try to be more than what you are, who you are. Like, you go to these big games and think, I have to play at a higher level. I have to like do something crazy. No. You just have to be you, and you have just to be your best. And that was an incredible moment with those guys. And they went on a run, which was incredible.
It was epic.
Yeah.
When you're giving these speeches, is it an hour before a game? Is it a day before a game? Is it in the locker room? Where does this all take place?
Most speeches are during training camp, so they're really not off with the game.
Now, training camp.
A couple have been before.
Okay.
Clemson, the night before. FSU, the year they won the national championship.
No way.
Yep.
Dang.
And I even predicted, I said, you guys are going to be in a storm. I said, they're going to be chanting. There's going to be a storm. You're going to be down. You're going to have to face adversity and find a way to come back. And they came back and won that game and went to the national championship.
Florida State fans.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a big game. That was a big game. So a lot of times it's training camp. And I don't usually like to speak the night before or the game day because
it's different.
It's different.
Yep.
But my energy is different during those days and my message is different. For those days, it's love the battle, love competing, love
get
the moment.
Get to versus have to.
But so often we're worried about making a mistake, messing up, and we are living in fear, worrying about what people think, worrying about what the media says. Love the battle, love competing, love the moment. And the minute you love the battle and love competing, you're no longer worrying about the outcome, and now you're playing your best in that moment. So it's a simple message.
I got no follow up or no. So a couple things, two quick counterpoints here. So you've met and speak with all these great organizations. Was there one you went to and immediately were like, I love this team. I love this crew. This is epic.
Yeah, the Commanders, no doubt. Like
that was a good,
man,
you said it, but kind
of
answered that.
Yeah, there was a synergy there. Like, and it was cool. Many of the guys were on other teams when I spoke to other teams, like Zach Ertz.
They're all new.
Zach Ertz, when I spoke to the Eagles, was there. And he was also now with the Commanders. We had Bobby Wagner, who was with the Seahawks. When I spoke there, he was now with the Commanders. And they had the great coaching staff, guys that I knew at other places. So when I got them, like, oh man, great to see you. Great to see you. Great to see you. It's cool. They brought in the best guys who I loved at every place I've ever been onto one team. And I was like, all right, they got some great energy. The Rams, the first time I spoke to the Rams, there was definitely a connection. Spoke to the Texas Longhorns last year. Had a really great time with those guys. Like, just really good guys. And, you know, work with the Dodgers.
Adding minutes to that, by the way.
And,
sorry.
And the Dodgers.
Five.
And the Dodgers a number of times, you know, early on in Dave Roberts' journey as a manager. When he first got the job, he reached out. And I worked with him, like, the first probably 4 years.
So, counter side of the question. Have you ever talked to a team and left and thought, uh-oh, these guys are effed. Like, this is just toxic.
No names.
Hey, no, I want names.
I always say, most of the teams I work with win, but we know that I'm not the reason. You know how we know? Because I also spoke to the Cleveland Browns. That's how we know.
I hate to say it in the Jags, too, but they were winning when you talked to them.
And
I love the Jags.
I spoke to the Browns, and Johnny Manziel was in the front row.
Oh.
And he wouldn't even look at me.
Oh.
Like, I've never had that happen before. Like, wouldn't even look at me. Was looking down,
distracted,
just
hungover.
Really weird.
He didn't want to play.
Weird energy.
He didn't want to play.
And I purposely didn't look at him. He's not looking at me. I'm not looking at him.
Yep.
Josh McCown was on that team as a backup quarterback. Greatest
dialed
ever.
In.
Loved him. Yep. And I thought, their culture is not great. Like, I can go to a team and figure out their culture. Now, I did speak to the Jaguars when Gus Bradley was the coach, you know, a few times, and obviously didn't help them. But Gus was building something the right way. And finally, the year he leaves was the year they actually turned things around.
Miles Jack wasn't down.
And so you think there's like, I don't know, why can't the Jaguars put it all together? What do you think is the issue over the years?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, what do you think?
Let it rip.
What do you think?
I grew up in South Florida.
Yeah.
Right? In Boca Raton,
was
kind of a Dolphins fan. My whole family grew up in Indiana. I was a diehard Colts fan.
Okay.
I'd sit in the box with my granddad. He was a CFO for Mason Ball Jars.
He
was a CFO for them for years.
We have
some
of those.
Box suites. I love the Colts. Peyton Manning's my favorite player ever.
Okay.
I love the Jags. Somehow, I think a transition in ownership. I don't know how the city's built. I think you need more life downtown, which is happening.
Okay.
Buy land, energy down there.
They're doing that.
I don't know. I don't want to say we're cursed, but
we had the great year. We had the great year a couple years ago with Doug Peterson. The team went to
the
playoffs, right?
We barely missed last year. We lost seven games by one score or less.
Crazy.
They need more John Gordon and Eric Ross, man. Let's go.
I believe they need us to go down work with them.
Put on the pads, Eric. Let's go.
I also gotta say, I love Doug Peterson. I thought it was great, but I believe this new coach, Liam, he's gonna do a great job.
I really
like him a lot. Got a chance to meet with him, hang out with him, talk to him. And he worked with Sean McVay, the Rams, when I spoke there. And he is really solid. He is sharp. He's young. I think he's going to be really strong.
You said two things to me. You can chime in too. Yeah. The GM also. The NFL is changing. Yeah. So these kids coming into the NFL have NIL money. They have, I'm not saying egos, but it's like you need younger coaches and staff. You need younger leadership because the NFL is changing quickly.
Oh, yeah.
I think we
look at the owners' meeting.
Yep.
They had a video of the owners' meeting. Mm-hmm. Jay Glazer is a buddy of mine. He was posting the video. All these coaches that are there now, most are young.
I love Jay Glazer.
You got Pete Carroll's a little older. You got
Chewing gum.
and he reads older. Yep. But most of the guys now are young guys. Right. I was the
I was an older guy, relatively young.
I know. I was the young guy. I was the young guy when I first started, and all these coaches were older. Now I'm like the old guy with all these young coaches working with them. It's wild.
Man, I want to keep going and going and going, but I promise I'll try to get you out of here before traffic. You look at yourself. You look in the mirror, right? The most powerful tool in the world, I think, is a mirror.
Okay.
Like, I'm the root of all my problems.
Right.
I'm the root of all, not all my success, right? Thanks, Joey, for all my success. And Trout. And Danny. And Mac. 1, 3, 5, 10, 20 years ago, what is some healthy advice you would give yourself? Hashtag healthy.
I love that. I would say those negative thoughts that are coming in, you don't have to believe all of your thoughts. You're not the thoughts that you think, you're the thoughts you believe. And so when the negative thoughts come in, attack you, accuse you, say you're not enough, you're hopeless, your future is done, you don't have to believe those lies. So I would say what I say now often, speak truth to those lies. Words of encouragement, words of life. I would also tell myself to enjoy more. Like everything I write in my books is actually advice that I would give myself. And I'm really giving it to myself first and then giving it to others. Over the years, as I've written these books, you have to then become the person you wrote about in the book. You have to become the person who actually takes that advice. And so I've been on this journey of becoming that better person that I wrote about. Because when I'm writing it, I'm at my best in that moment. Like the best version of me is coming forth. It's the essence of love, love and positivity and care and wanting to make a difference. That's coming in. And then you have life happen. You have these moments happen. You have these challenges. You have someone who curses you out. How do you respond in that moment? So I really believe a lot of my life is trying to live up to the person that wrote that book and be that person. And so for me, when I look in the mirror, what do I tell myself is, gosh darn it, you're smart enough, you're good enough. And no, I'm just kidding. I tell myself, you know what? Often I say this, life is short. Like my mom passed away, my dad passed away. Like my wife and I say this often, enjoy the moment.
Enjoy the
focus
ride.
Focus on what matters and what matters most. Like you got to really think like the end in mind, as Covey often said. Like, what do you truly want to create? What do you want to build? What is worth your time to work on? And I wouldn't waste time on distractions. Distractions are the enemy of greatness. I allowed too many things to distract me in the past. And I would say, focus on what matters most. And that's how I live my life now. Like, what truly matters most? And even coming here was really a choice. Do I come here? I had a million things to do. I had a million things to do. But do I come here or not? And I thought, no, I want to come there. I had a feeling this would be great, and it's been incredible. But it was a choice to say, I want to do this and not that. And you have to make those choices in life. And this was an intentional choice. I think a lot of people go through life, they don't live with intention. So they don't actually know what they want to create. They don't know what they want to build. And they wind up just getting the life that is not really meant for them. It's a life that unfortunately happened to them.
You just ate the sandwich versus make the sandwich. That's a terrible metaphor, guys, but you get the point.
Yeah.
I had two quick shout outs. Yeah. Grant McMahon asked that question. Like he wanted to know backstory, the get to versus have to. Yep. That's Jake Clear said, ask him about get to versus have to. We have so many friends who look up to you, myself included.
Like, that means a lot.
The fact that,
it's because you got free Mo's all those years.
It was not me. Hey, it was my buddy Mark. Hey, he gets a shout out too. We'll tell that story.
How long I was known as the Mo's guy? That's wild that I was known as the Mo's guy, but I didn't want to be known as the Mo's guy. But even now, like, yeah. I'll meet people and they'll be like, people don't know that I'm writing even. They'll be like, hey, you still on those Mo's? No, not anymore. What are you doing now? Yeah, I'm
kind of a big deal.
And like, I'm a writer. Yeah, I'm just writing books. Oh, yeah. You wrote a book? Yeah. So it's just funny, these kind of conversations.
I love it.
In Jacksonville. I think I was like, when the younger kids, they care more that you own Moe's more than you actually were a book writer. That was cooler in most people's minds.
You can definitely relate to this. You said the younger kids, right? Up here, how old are you?
35.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm playing against 30-year-olds in pickleball, and yeah. I would say, I think I'm their age when I'm playing with them.
Hey.
I think I'm their age. My wife is the same way. Like when we're hanging out with 30-year-olds, like we do sometimes, we think we're their age. We have to remind ourselves, no, we're like 20 years older than them. Like they look up to us like, for wisdom, they don't think we're the same age, but we think we are their age.
Up here, I'm 42. Up here, I'm 25.
Right? Yeah.
And then I go play with a 25-year-old and something. It's like, nah, you're 42,
yeah.
buddy.
Yeah. I'll take 35.
Oh, that's
maybe
great.
When you become 50-something, you'll think you're 35.
Dude, come on, I'm not trying to blow up your ego. Do you have a big ego?
No.
I don't think you do.
Not at all.
No. I'm
I know what I'm good at. I know what, and I'm very confident now in what I'm doing and how I'm doing it. So in years past, like when I wrote these books, I wrote what I thought I knew. Now, after working with all these teams and leaders and organizations, yep. I'm really convicted. Like, no, I know this is the way, and I know this will have an impact. So I'm actually confident in that. I'm confident in my work, but as an ego, no, I don't think I'm better than anyone. And I also know that everyone has value, and my job is to recognize the value in people. And also, humility to me is a really important trait.
Superpower.
But I also think there's false humility where you can actually go, well, I can try to pretend I'm humble and be humble when you're really not. Mm. And you can know if someone is genuinely humble or not and real. And I think my humility comes from, I believe in God. But I know that God is the ultimate power, and without God, I'm nothing. And I'm actually am nothing in many ways. I think I am nothing, and so it's about me worshiping God, praising God, thanking God, and everything I have is a gift. And
we didn't even hit the faith component.
It's okay. Well, we just did that moment when you recognize God and for God,
Danny
makes
a man.
You humble. Here's what humility is: knowing there's a God. And it's not you. That's humility.
Oh. I was literally about to say that myself. Is so many people seem to think humility is just downplaying your strengths and what you're capable of. Humility is really knowing where it comes from.
Yes.
And leaning into that.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Very wise. Very wise. And I also learn from, again, just that's phenomenal. You learn from everyone. I learn from younger people, older people, learn from my kids. And I'll take advice. And I'm still coachable too. Like, I'm always looking for to get better. Zig Ziglar was
Zig Ziglar, John Maxwell, John Gordon. Yeah, like,
but
come on.
Ziglar was someone I looked up to.
The OG.
And I went to speak at an event, and Zig was in the front row taking notes when I was speaking. And I was probably in my 30s, and I looked over and he's taking notes. I couldn't believe it. And I said, Zig, I said, one of the big goals of my life was to meet you. And he said, you need to have bigger goals. And he was sharp and humble beyond belief at 82 years old taking notes. That taught me a great lesson. Talked to Ken Blanchard the other day. Ken Blanchard is now 85 years old.
All
the
these one names.
Minute manager.
These are
Ken is my hero, right? Ken's my hero. 85. And he's on the final stretch of his life.
The back nine.
But
the back
most
three
humble
holes.
And amazing guy ever. So you learn from these greats and they make you better. They make you greater.
Man, there's so much stuff. I want to keep asking questions, but I'm watching that clock. I keep extending the time here.
Go ahead. Let's go. Let's do it.
His traffic is just...
Are you in? Yeah.
Oh, sorry. John Gordon, that's what the hell just happened. End of the radio show. Boom. We're going to keep going. All this stuff. Trust me. Joey's got to run out. Dude. Okay.
Go get it, Joey.
So now...
So I can't believe you're leaving. Obviously, you don't think this is good enough.
No, oh, no. He's
negative energy.
He's pissed.
I'm just kidding.
Not an energy
boss. You're affecting my ego now, Joey.
He's a good dad is what he is.
You know what ego stands for? Ego stands for edging God out, right?
Ooh, and so, let's go faith.
So Ryan Holiday wrote Ego is the Enemy.
Great book.
Yeah, but ego is not the enemy. Ego is not the enemy. It's the feeling of separation and disconnection. When you have a separation and disconnection, what happens is you feel powerless because you're disconnected from God. And because you feel powerless, your ego has to rise up and give you a sense of power. But it's actually false power because it's connected to self, not God. And so actually that's the problem. It's not ego. It's the feeling that you are separate. The more you connect to God, then you find true power, true
connection.
This
is great. This is great. Dad stuff, God stuff. Joey, we do good dad versus bad dad, right?
Okay.
Our rule is kids first, family first always.
That.
Work,
love
like you got a meeting, cancel that for the
I
field.
I love that. Family
He's going
first.
To softball.
I love
coaches
it.
His daughter's team.
That's epic. That's awesome.
Mac, come on up here, buddy. We're still recording. You're definitely going to hit traffic now, by the way.
That's right.
Okay.
Five more minutes. Let's go.
Oh, Mac's a huge fan. Let's go. Family.
Okay.
How important is family to you?
It's everything.
It's everything.
It's everything.
You mentioned your wife.
In the past, I may have sacrificed my family for success. But after realizing what matters most and focusing on my family, there came a point when I said, I've got to make sure that I'm a success at home. Because if I don't succeed at home, I'm a failure. And so I put my family first. And it was the year that I put my family first where... Actually, that's when my career took off.
Mm.
So I made my family a priority. If you invest in the root, you get a great supply of fruit. If you focus on...
You got so many one-liners. Well, say it again.
If you invest in the root,
that's solid.
You get a great supply of fruit. But if you focus on the fruit of the tree, the numbers, the success, the fame, the external rewards. None and you ignore matters. The root, the tree dies.
Yep.
And so many families, they're dying while the person is actually trying to become a success or try to achieve fame. So I knew early on, like I was on the plane and I told this woman, I said, I don't want it. She said, you need to be a household name. I said, I'd rather be a bigger name in my household.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
So I've met you probably 10 times in passing. Hey, meet. You spoke at LifeWork Leadership, which
love that.
I, to
that
me,
so
Tammy's coming on. That's the CEO of the local okay. one. LifeWork Leadership is a Christian leadership program that I love. You spoke, crushed it, per usual. Can you share your journey with faith? Like I wasn't always
a believer.
Yep,
I was growing up as a Jewish Catholic. Mom was Jewish, dad was Catholic, Italian. So we celebrated all the holidays.
All of them.
But never went to church or temple. But biologically, I was 98% Ashkenazi Jewish. Was bar mitzvahed at 13, but it was like a crash course bar mitzvah.
Yep.
Then a new ager in my 20s, a seeker, Buddhism, new age. But I believed in God, like spiritually I believed in God, just no religion. I had no idea who Jesus was. And then at 31, after moving to Jacksonville, when my wife gave me that ultimatum, I became more open. I was just trying to be happy. I was just trying to feel better. Positive psychology led to thank you walks. Thank you walks led to then praying. And then a friend gave me some sermons about Jesus. I listened to those sermons, spoke to me. And I remember saying, God, if there is something to this Jesus, I'm open. Show me the signs. I'm driving down to Orlando to give a local talk. And as I'm driving, I'm looking to the left and I hear, look, and I turn to the right. And there's a sign that says, Jesus is the answer. So I literally saw the sign that says,
driving to Orlando from Jacksonville.
Yeah, Jesus is the answer.
Oh,
that sign is still there. Now it says, Jesus is still the
answer. I know the sign. I know that sign.
Which is wild. But it kept happening. Kept seeing sign after sign after sign. So I go see a Buddhist energy healer because I was having troubles with my gut and my stomach and all these health issues. So I go see him. He does this kind of thing where he's doing like Thai organ massage, like it's almost acupuncture with fingers on your stomach. And I said, hey, I've seen all these signs that say Jesus is the answer. What do you make of that? He said, oh, that's simple. He said, Christianity is like spiritual cheating. He said, I'm a Buddhist. I'm trying to attain enlightenment on my own. But with Christianity, all you do is believe and receive. He said, Jesus takes your soul pain. He takes your heavy vibrational energy. Christians call it sin. I said, can I take someone else's soul pain? He said, can you handle your own? He said, you can't connect to a perfect energetic God if you have heavy vibrational energy. Jesus takes it so you can connect to God. I always saw the world in terms of energy, right? Energy Bus was my first book. I wrote that as a Christian. So that was actually as I was becoming a follower of Jesus.
A lot of these have biblical principles.
Yeah, as I was becoming a follower of Jesus. Right. I wrote that book and I was baptized in 2007 when that book was coming out. But I was also at that before I got baptized, I was now starting to believe and receive and open. I walked out of that Buddhist energy healer's office saying, I'm going to give this Jesus a shot. Not the way most people find Jesus through a Buddhist energy healer.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is the most non-traditional way ever.
I said, I'm going to give this Jesus a shot because I believed in a God that would want to take my sin, take my soul pain. It made so much sense. I believed in a God that would want to make it easier, believe and receive, that would want to connect. Why would I want to do it on my own? Why are you trying to do it on your own? Is what I was thinking of him.
I got this.
And I came back to him maybe a year later and said, hey, you know, I've been following Jesus. It's been amazing what you told me. He goes, he didn't remember even saying that to me, which is wild. Wild. So incredible encounter. His name was Don Van Vliet. He had a place in
Don Atlanta. Van Vliet.
Van Vliet.
Vliet.
Yeah, Van Vliet.
That's a fun
name. Like Greta Vliet. Like Greta Van Vliet.
It sounds like a, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like
I know who Greta Van Vliet is. I spoke to In-N-Out Burger. We were in Hawaii speaking and they had Greta Van Vliet come and play for the people of In-N-Out. It was wild.
You probably done so much cool stuff.
Very cool stuff. Very cool. But I also had food allergies wherever I went. So I'd be in the nicest resorts ever. And I'd be there speaking at the nicest place, eating a can of mackerel before I spoke because I couldn't eat anything else.
Yep.
For 12 years, I couldn't eat normal food. The only thing I could eat was seafood and some white rice and mashed up vegetables.
Shoot. Speaking of which.
So many issues. And so that caused, again, humility, right? You're at these great places, but you realize, man, all I can eat is this.
I forgot. I love funny gifts, by the way. So Marlo.
You can hear it. I know what it is.
Yeah, okay. Marlo's
she's my executive assistant,
which is awesome. She's
amazing.
I said,
she's amazing.
Want a snack or like a beverage, anything? She said, Fiji water and plain rice cakes.
plain rice cakes.
They're lightly salted. They're not completely plain.
Thank you.
But
for the car,
you can throw those out. You can do whatever you want with it.
This is a commercial. We love
right. If you want, hey Quaker, if you want to sponsor the show, feel free.
Yeah, more than happy.
It's funny because whenever I'm going to speak somewhere, people always ask, "What can we get John to eat?" And I'm really like some blueberries, some rice cakes. I'm pretty simple.
Yeah. Anything we miss? There's so much stuff. The event coming up. Yeah.
There's a lot.
Again, my question.
Jaguars. Just,
we got this.
The new coach.
Hey, I cannot
wait. I predict great things with the new coach.
Come on, sit up here, Matt.
The new GM. New energy.
Love it all.
I predict Jacksonville is going to have a strong downtown eventually. And this city is, I believe,
right on
the best in the world. I love this city. I love it. We've been here now over 24 years. It's home, never leaving, best place on earth. And I just love seeing it grow. It's only going to get better. So many people are coming here. It's been nuts.
It's awesome. Now it's like, I feel bad, man. You're going to hit traffic on the way home. I know it already. That's all right. Thank you for joining.
You think this is traffic, though? You're going to hit traffic. This is nothing like New York.
South Florida, New York, Orlando.
Miami,
like,
that area is the worst.
Funniest thing in the world.
Everyone complains, like, go live in this area.
Oh, yeah, 5 minutes of traffic. It's going to be really bad. We had a place in Santa Monica. We'd spend time out in L.A. You want to see traffic? That's traffic.
That's why I love
this. This is nothing.
I actually don't want to talk about it, because then if anyone hears this and they move here, like, nope. Just stay out, man. The city's great. On the cusp of greatness. Any more shout outs before we wrap up?
Shout outs to you, man. This is great that you're doing this.
Come on.
This is awesome, Eric.
That's actually a great point. Did you have fun?
I had fun.
That's all that matters, right? No a-holes.
Nope.
Energy vampires. Nope. We're going to change that.
And Mac Attack was.
Mac Attack's going to. You got to come over here and ask the question.
We're going to sign the book.
Would you come back?
Yes.
Okay. We can do either studio, doesn't matter. I'll ask anyone, do you have fun? That matters. I think you, oh my gosh, man, we can sit here for hours.
As long as we added value, though, that's really what it's always about.
Are you kidding me?
Adding value.
There's already people asking questions. I said, just wait. Mac, can you say, will you sign my book?
Will you sign my
book? In the mic.
Oh. Will you sign?
Too loud.
Will you sign the book?
Yes, Mac, I'll sign the book.
Please. That's what the hell just happened.